A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What Culture Gaming. I'm Scott, joined by Rachel Howie.
Hello.
And Ben Roy.
Hello.
Turner, rather. Ben Roy. And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
And I'm Scott Tilford. I thought we would do a Briggle blind ranking of the best games of the year. So, everybody on the gaming team was allowed to pick from 20 overall candidates. Whatever you put at number one was 20 points. And then everybody submitted everything to me. So only I know what the real top 10 is, which is what I hold in my hand right now.
Oh, I'm quivering with anticipation.
There's some surprises, let's say. Some people went rogue and voted for some things. I'm going to mention some honourable mentions, some things that only a couple of us voted for that did get them in there. But then once I started adding everything back up, that stuff got kicked out. So the honourable mentions are Mortal Kombat 11, which only I care about in this world. You played a little bit of it, but it wasn't high enough, was it, Ben Roy? Mine was Mortal Kombat 11. The next one down was Metro Exodus, another solid game.
I couldn't believe...
the top 10. Well, Josh and Ben Roy tried.
Where did you have it on your list?
I had it quite high. Mine was like
six.
Civil.
Tried a little bit, but it could have been higher.
Democracy.
Another thing that tried and failed was Gears 5. Ben Roy and Josh forming a coalition to get Gears 5 into the top 10. Didn't happen.
Fourth best game of the year.
Not even remotely true, but it, you know, we tried. Last thing, which is a bit heartbreaking, was Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Have any of you even played Pokemon?
Yes, it's really good, but it's Let's Go's better, Rach. I would
have. Whoa!
Yeah!
It is not.
Yeah. This is a thing for a chatty face in the future.
Digimon for life.
No, nor Yu-Gi-Oh! But for now, only Rach and Rich voted Pokemon. You guys voted Gears. I voted Mortal Kombat or whatever. Everything else, once it was added up, gave us a top 10. So we're going to go in reverse order, 10 down to 1. And number 10 was Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Okay.
Interesting,
so
Scott.
I thought that was a pretty good number 10.
That's quite a good number 10. It's only because I know what the honorable mentions are.
Yes.
And Call of Duty Modern Warfare for me was a great game. It still is a great game. I still play it a lot. I think they packed so much goodness into that. The amount of content in that game is insane. You've got the campaign, you've got Spec Ops, you've got multiplayer, but in multiplayer you've got gunfight, you've got ground war, you've got the regular maps, and it's all really good. But is it better than Gears 5? Is it better than Metro Exodus?
Okay, we're not going to have, is it better
Pokemon?
Than Pokemon? We're not going to have, is it better than the honourable mentions, every single one of these? Because the answer will be no, because Mortal Kombat 11 was in the honourable mentions.
Right, okay,
to me, that smells like an honourable mentions game. I'm just saying.
It just
smells like honourable. Yeah, but these days, come on. Smells
you
like
wanted Gear, you had Gears 5 at like number 3.
Fourth best game of the year. Though.
Insane. But yeah, in terms of COD, that was voted up by pretty much everybody who put it in a roundabout sort of 5 to 6, cumulatively allowed it to sort of be, you know, in the top 10. For me, I think that the campaign is a little bit naff. It's only about 3 to 4 hours long, but I love the multiplayer. I've been playing that pretty much every day. And for everyone else who's played it, it seems like this is the one where they finally got it right. Like, after so many weird experiments with future stuff and spaceships and Kit Harington, and now it's gone back to being normal again.
Well, that's it, because every single Call of Duty, when it comes out, we always say it's back to form. This is the one, you've got to play this one, and then everyone drops off after about a month. But this one, that hasn't happened at least yet. And I'm still interested to see what they're going to add. All the DLC is free. That kicks off December 3rd, and I'm going to jump back in and play those old maps and play the new game modes. I think it's going to be really fun.
It's a beautiful thing. And I will reiterate as well that we have a whole bunch of Game of the Year stuff coming overall. We have a chatty face thing going live on Friday. We have a whole bunch of different podcasts breaking stuff down. But there was no way to get everybody on this tiny table, and this is this assortment.
I mean, we're barely managing this.
Yeah, we're barely in, but we were the people who played the most stuff overall this year, so you're looking at the elite right now. The
top,
wow.
The Royal Four, you might say.
I said about you, Josh, though. You said about that whole news cycle. I'm looking forward to when they go, is Call of Duty dead again? when we get that about, you know, July.
But yeah, Ben Roy, like about a month before the next one's announced, that'll be the thing. It'll be like, oh, was it really good? And then we'll go, no. But the next one might be.
You never know. It goes back to World War, it might be. Right, number nine was Untitled Goose Game.
Oh, what? which is that so low?
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 That should not have been in the top 10.
Untitled Goose Game rocked the world. It shook the world of gaming. I tell you what, it was just this brilliant tiny little package of honk, and I loved it. You loved it. We all loved it, apart from Ben Roy, apparently.
Ben barely got out the tutorial.
I shelved it.
You couldn't. How far did you get?
Oh my god.
We're not. Are we gonna have this? How far did you get?
No,
every
no.
Time?
I just want to know how much of the Goose Game. You played.
I played the intro bit, and I thought it to be a bit tedious and infuriating, and I was ready to go back to Mario Maker on my Switch.
You didn't think it was basically Hitman, but with Goose.
Oh, but I would have played more Hitman if I wanted to play Hitman as a thing.
The thing is, like, they did more, because everyone thought it was just going to be this kind of one-dimensional banter game, kind of like Goat Simulator. But, like, for me, the thing that I genuinely love about Goose Game, it didn't make my top 20, it was an honourable mention. But I think that, like you said, the thing that they do, it's like, you can experiment with AI patterns and just have fun with, like, general sort of tomfoolery, and I'm going to kick this bucket onto a dude's head and make this guy fall over into a bunch of tomatoes and whatever.
Yeah, it's a puzzle game.
Yeah, it's kind of like a puzzle game, and it kind of has that sort of, like, sardonic, like, core that Hitman does, which I think elevates it, because, like, I forget exactly how many people had it in their top. It was in the lot of people's top eights. Your rate user was just pretty high. Rich was pretty high. I think Osley had it pretty high, which like resulted in it being higher than we might assume.
I will say I'm probably being a bit harsh on it, but it got memed to hell, and I was ready just to not see a Goose meme after about 2 days.
There wasn't a ridiculous amount of Goose gamage across the internet. Josh, did you have a bit of
I didn't
Goose?
Get a chance to play it because I'm saving it for a Christmas game when I'm off work and I get a Christmas chance Goose. To play it then, cause some mischief. But, good. You know, I didn't vote for it, obviously, because I didn't get a chance to play it. But I think its memeable quality is actually, it's a huge pro. So many people who don't even play games were so interested in this little Goose. Ewan Paterson dressed up as the Goose for Halloween. This had a cross-media pull to it. He hasn't even got a Switch, but everyone seemed to enjoy it as a game as well. It wasn't just, you know, a joke. It was an actual game at the heart of it. Because that's what I was worried about. I remember before it came out, a lot of people were talking about it. You guys in the office.
I didn't
believe. I thought it was just going to be a joke. I didn't realize there was a game behind it. I thought it was going to be Goat Simulator. But it turns out that it's not. It actually is the 9th best game of the year.
Officially, objectively, Untitled Goose Game is the 9th best game of the year. Number 8. Is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order,
okay.
Which is surprisingly low, maybe.
Unfortunately, I haven't played this one yet. This is my Christmas game, so that's maybe why it's so low, because I wasn't able to give it any points, but I hear really good things.
Yes, I think that most of us who have gone through it have come away mostly positive, but acknowledging some things, like how much it is a Souls clone, or how some of the enemies sort of rely on a lot of chip damage and cheap stuff, which Mr. Benroy loves he loves a bit of Sekiro, so anything like that is going to get
to him. The whole lol you're dead genre is great in a bit.
The lol you're dead genre.
Yeah, I think I was pretty done with it after Bloodborne. By the way, I got a platinum in Bloodborne, so don't come at me. I know about these games. And this is just...
not Sekiro, though.
What is that Mandalorian. What is the guy on Dathomir just doing the whole time, just waiting to poke you when he comes
out? There
are
a lot of people around corners. Yeah,
poke around the corner.
That's one of the worst things that a lot of devs learned from Souls, was like, oh, okay, challenge is cheapness, and then they just do it the wrong way around.
Yeah, and they've kind of done it... I feel like they did it wrong here, but... And also, the Star Wars nerd in me, like, the lightsaber is not a lightsaber in this game. It might as well be just a glow stick. Because if I hit a rat and it doesn't die instantly, what's the point?
Get the damage upgrade, man.
Oh, man.
I did.
Yeah, did you though?
I was going for getting the platinum the other day and I'm still hitting things with full damage and it's not dying in one hit.
You're not wrong. I do love that. This is the same if you go back for our 2018 Game of the Year and 2016 Game of the Year. I don't think we did one for 2016 rather, or whatever. If you go back the last couple of years, we tend to be like, this is a big celebration of what everyone loved. And then we just spend most of the time going, well, that's not what I would have put at number 3. That's not what I would have put at number 2.
I spent the first half of this video just in disbelief. I was just staring at the camera. And I'm looking at you guys, and I'm thinking, this is my third one of these.
Yeah,
in every year, I continue to be disappointed.
Well, you could have spent your points on something other than Gears 5, Josh, but you didn't do it, did you?
I think Jedi Fallen Order, this is about right. I think I had it about 8, 9, or 10 for me. It was that upper end of it, because it is, I really love it as a Star Wars fan as well. Like, when I first put it on with no expectations of this game, it blew me away. I think I even took a screenshot, which I never do. I'm never going to look at it again. I just thought, I need to, you know, capture, immortalize this feeling that I've got. Mm-hmm. I do think it sort of perhaps outstays its welcome a little bit in the final hours, but it starts so well, it feels good, and it just looks awesome, and it's very solid, and I want another one.
Yeah, I think if we're going to just go all our positives, it opens so well, it ends extremely well. There's a whole weird chunk of Soulsian copying in the middle that sort of makes it drag a little bit, but
there is.
But there's an overall feeling of positivity that I think obviously resulted in a whole bunch of us putting it somewhere in the top 10. Speaking of disbelief, number 7, Planet Zoo.
Oh, that's great.
Planet Zoo is apparently phenomenal. Now, this got into the position that it's in because of Rach, Owsley, and Rich. It was Rich and Owsley's number one, which gave it 20 points each. I know. And then, Rach, you put it in your top 10 as well. So please tell us about this amazing PC thing.
Oh, well, Planet Zoo is just, it's the same guys that made Planet Coaster, but it feels like more in the line of Zoo Tycoon than Planet Coaster, because Coaster for me, it was always so like overwhelming. It was too complicated. It took 7 hours to make anything, and it just didn't really push my buttons. But with Planet Zoo, it's got animals. It's easier to understand. You can care for them. Like, I'll say this on behalf of Owsley, because I know how much he loves, like, when you've cared for an animal enough, and it's sort of healthy and it's fit and it's done its bit, you can release it into the wild, and it's just the most wholesome thing.
Do you get a cutscene for that? Like a little sort of like go forth.
You get like a little notification.
Okay, that's,
like, you know. No, it's just, as far as a simulation game goes, it's like, it is running your own zoo, and what's not to love?
Does it, like, because the thing with that is that Rich and Oz have talked loads about just being addicted to it all year long. Does it just have a bunch of systems that it just works in some way to bring you back, like, every day or whatever?
It's just checking, like, well, it's in the same way of Planet Coaster, where it just takes forever to do anything.
Right.
So, yeah, you're kind of like, I think Rich's metrics are like, he's like, oh, I've played 30 hours and I've made 2 enclosures.
Yeah.
So
he said he spent like 4 hours designing a snake enclosure, but it must be an extremely good snake enclosure.
I've only been doing the, like, preset scenarios, like the zoo's already made for me, and I'm just mucking out the poop and stuff, like, that's all I'm doing. But no, Rich is very creative, and I think for a creative person to like make your zoo from scratch, it's just like that kind of level of like spending forever on it. It's really, really good.
I want to know whether you can get a sloth.
There are no sloths.
What the hell?
But DLC.
Good, okay, because sloth DLC might change. Because apparently it's coming to consoles next year, 2020. So everyone on PS4 and whatever can find out what the hell the big deal is.
So it'll be game of the year 2020.
That's when it's actually going to matter, but you can't snob a PC lot anymore. So, you know, Hollow Knight came out in 2017, but we class it as the 2018 game, depending on when it came out. And number 6 is Devil May Cry 5, which was my number 1, if I was going to be completely subjective. But I think DMC 5 is just the best action game ever made, probably.
You know what? You might be right there, Scott. I haven't played as many as you, and I hadn't enjoyed the DMC franchise as much as you had until very recently.
You checked them all out.
I played them all in a row, and even then, I was not fatigued by the time I got to 5, because it was just, for me, head and shoulders, in terms of presentation, in terms of actual game feel, above all the other ones. For me, it's between that and Devil May Cry 3, my favourite one in the franchise. But this, like, the split between each character, I thought that might have gotten a little bit annoying, but they were so distinct and unique that I kind of wanted to go back through the game again to play the moments where you did get to choose and, like, choose someone else and, like, level their, you know, abilities up and stuff. And it was so mad and so imaginative and so beautiful, and I wanted to drink it up. I wanted to be the guy from There Will Be Blood and put my little straw in the milkshake and just give me the good stuff.
That's what playing DMC5 feels like, but it doesn't stop for like 30 hours.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Rach, we played it on stream for a couple hours and you were a big fan. I think, like, the way that it just looks and the way that you can just, like, leap into it and do all these ridiculous over-the-top combos and stuff, that's what the series has always been known for, but I think 5 does it better than any of the rest of them. Ben, why did you play a little bit?
I'm going to drink Josh's milkshake.
Good.
Because I feel exactly the same about this game. I'm kind of like a casual fan of this franchise. And it was always like back in the day when you go to your friend's house and play a game. I never like owned these games, but I played them with friends and I played for a friend's house. But praise Game Pass. Praise Game Pass. Thank you. Because I don't know if I'd have bought this otherwise.
Lord Spencer.
And I am very glad that I got this one. Because I've just loved bashing things about. I felt this is almost what Jedi Fallen Order should have been, to be entirely honest.
That was one of the weird things playing Fallen Order, because it is so, like, it reminded me of the Force Unleashed games and, like, more over-the-top character action stuff, and then, like, Fallen Order is so Soulsian that it really stretches out the reward loop and stuff like that, whereas, like, DMC is just kind of like, here you go, just play as Nero, you can cut everything in half, your gun, your arm is actually a gun, plus you can ride on it if you want.
And, like, that RE engine looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And V's my boy. I was V as much as I could.
V is Kylo Ren. Yeah. Sure.
V has come
to. Oh my god.
Yes.
All I'm saying is they're all sexy boys, you know what I mean? Yes. They're all sexy boys, they're all sexy people.
Dante is number one.
Dante is. Oh, is he though?
Yeah. Dante is dad. Yes. Let's be honest.
Dante is, I mean, he does look like he's getting on a bit now. He looks a bit like Kurt Cobain.
Oh, but that's.
It's better for me.
It's good though.
That's better. Yeah.
But I mean, considering that, you know, DMC4 was like 2008 and they had that weird reboot in 2013 and it was like, okay, are we ever going to get like traditional DMC again? This was the one where they just kind of went all the way back to that, like, DMC4 and was like, okay, let's just forget 2013 even happened and let's just carry on as if we were supposed to before. And yeah, I think the way that they brought it together, like Benroy said, with the RE engine, which I found out stands for Reach for the Sky engine.
Aww.
I thought it was Resident Evil, but no, it's the Reach for the Sky engine.
Ah, it's Resident Evil.
It might as well be.
Yeah.
But that thing is an absolute technical showpiece if you want to check it out on Pro, Xbox One X, or whatever. Number 5 is Control. Almost. Which is going to be gutting for these two, maybe, because you guys had it at number one. Well, you didn't.
I didn't have it at number one.
I was at number. Mine was at number two. It was number one for most of the year. Well, Resident Evil 2 was kind of, but Control. Oh my God, Remedy is just so back. I couldn't believe playing this game. Mm-hmm. The more and more it went on, from going into the FBC straight away and all being creepy and mysterious and reading like, you can't take this with you, you can't take this with you. You're just like, I'm in the Remedy world again. And you go through and you just get lured in by these mysteriously weird characters. Mm-hmm. The game at times looks gorgeous with the lighting, and I just found the combat, like, if I can play a game and I can play the game with the first weapon that I get, mm-hmm. and I just don't have to change to anything. I'm not lazy, but I kind of like that because I like to play the character more mm-hmm. than I use things, and just using that same pistol all the way through, and then learning the abilities like to fly, to throw stuff. By the way, throwing stuff, this was a true Jello fantasy here, and I will keep gushing. I'll keep gushing, so I'm going to let someone else talk about this, but almost my game there.
You're a big fan. I think the thing with the powers that Ben always mentioned is all the physics-based stuff, which means you can just like hold a button and just grab anything from a piece of concrete off the wall to vending machines and pieces of office equipment and whatever. Which reminded me of an old PS2 game called PsyOps, where you just anything that was physics-based and just lobbing everything at evil people all day long. It's so good, Rage.
Oh my God, I need to play this game. Honestly,
you do, man.
I need to play it. I know I will like it. It's just Death Stranding.
The thing is, the Control is immaculate. The world that they build, the whole, like Ben said, the FBC is the Federal Bureau of Control. The whole point of that game is that you start out as this character called Jesse Faden, who just arrives, and I think we'll just stay away from spoilers, but the best thing about it is that you arrive at this weird, mysterious government facility and no one's there, and then you kind of just play through from there and find out what they were into, and there's a lot of Men in Black stuff going on, this weird supernatural stuff. But that stuff is done so well, and then the combat itself is also snappy as hell.
You two are playing on a PS4 Pro, right?
Yeah.
So it's a testament to me, like, this ran like dog on an initial
PS4. They've patched it quite a lot now.
My PS4 was floating in the air like this. And I'd find myself getting used to
it.
I knew when things were going to hit, because as soon as you throw a rock into one guy, he flies into a table and that all breaks and the PS4 goes and it's just like,
jeez. When it works though, like on the higher
PC,
end stuff,
mate.
Yeah, the thing is on PC, like they actually put ray tracing in it, which apparently is one of the first games to do it on this level or whatever. Don't know, I'm a console boy, but it's something to do with reflections in the windows. And my point is that Control has like all these new age things like ray tracing, like all these different particle effects, and like you said, like the destruction of like tables and splinters and wood and whatever. So when you're flinging dudes through everything, it looks spectacular.
Yeah, man.
And one other thing, the teasers of Alan Wake in this. Oh, I love you,
Sam. That's DLC for 2020. They've teased an Alan Wake additional DLC pack.
I'd buy the crap out of that.
You might do.
I think, for me, the biggest pro for Control, I think, in a year that has had so many samey games, is that it just had so much personality. Mm. Like, the gameplay is great, the story, the implications of it anyway are really good, but for me it was just that, like you said, Benroy, the fingerprints of Remedy were all over it in every single part of this game, and it was just a joy again to drink in and live in this world and see what mad music video they'd have behind next door.
The thing you said, it's like a love letter to Remedy fans, but it's an encapsulation of everything that they've brought, that they're known for, all the iconic stuff. Like James McCaffrey, Max Payne, there's one of the characters in this, the lead of the building. Alan Wake is in this. Poet of the Fall are a band that have been in all their past games, and they have a new song that's in the game. And it's just like, if you're a Remedy fan, if you grew up playing Max Payne and those other things, like, it is one giant love letter to everything that you like, respect and love about the studio. It's brilliant, but I didn't think that it had an ending, otherwise I would have put it higher up. We'll see what's in the DLC.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Number four is Outer Worlds.
Oh, nice.
Not Wilds, Worlds, Outer Worlds, Obsidian's Outer Worlds. Now, we've all played Outer Worlds. This is something that I think excels in just in terms of how much responsiveness is in the world. What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing at anything.
What are you laughing at?
Continue. I'm enjoying your point.
Are you, though?
Yes.
The thing with that game, I think, is that everything that you do in that, the whole game responds to you in terms of different dialogue options and different paths you can take through it, with a specific conclusion that you have to get to. That it seems like everything eventually comes back together. But there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can get there. What?
Nothing. I'm just interested in what you guys see specifically in the Outer Worlds, because it made my top 10, but it was quite far down. It was.
I don't know if it wasn't a fan
or something like that.
I was a fan.
I thought you knocked it down.
It was 11, but okay. This is a very good
didn't
year
sound like
for
a
me.
Fan.
Well, this is it, because it's been such a good year, and the Outer Worlds is like genuinely a great game. And if you are interested in these kinds of RPGs or Obsidians of the Work or Fallout, you should absolutely play it. But for me, it was just a very good one of those. Like, it didn't have that feature or element or story or character that really, you know, pushed it up into something special. For me, it was just...
It was a warm blanket. It was just like a nice, cup of cocoa. I remember Fallout. Let's play this. Yeah. It runs. Oh, that's good.
And that's really good. And that was an enjoyable couple of weeks. And I loved some of the characters, Parvati, obviously.
Yes.
And I loved being in that world again. But there was nothing in there that elevated it to the next
level. The thing is, like, it is another one of those, but I think that the way that they do it, like, obviously, like you said, the engine runs so much better, like, the combat is so much snappier. You haven't got to worry about VATS, but you can slow everything down. So even that was just like, okay, they've perfected something that even Bethesda never got right. As much as Fallout 4's, like, gun handling was a bit weightier, Fallout 4, every other aspect of Fallout 4 fell apart for me. So, like, it was one of those cases of, like, okay, this is the vision that Bethesda and Obsidian have tried in the past, but, like, different elements have never, you know, managed to line up. So that was my first major thing. My other thing is just the character... The memorability is the world. The fact that they have this entire chunk of the galaxy taken up by capitalistic mentalities just run amok, and like ideas that if you die, then you know your closest living relative has to take care of the body, but it's the person that was closest to you that's a living relative, therefore the whole village suffers or whatever. Just ways that the galaxy is like, you know, they have this like capitalistic dictatorship ruling everything.
I will agree with that. The writing in this game,
the writing's
is
phenomenal.
The best part.
Mm. Oh, it's really funny. One thing I'll say about like the game itself, like the story is obviously fantastic, and I love the characters, but I just loved how accessible the game was. Mm. It wasn't too like obnoxious. It did what it did, and it did it well, and I enjoyed it. Mm. And I feel like it's a game you could enjoy for like an hour at a time, kind of thing, without having to get like massively absorbed into it. I thought it was really good.
How did you guys play in terms of builds? Were you all out action focused, or did you talk your way through?
Pistol, I think.
Nice.
Small gun.
It was very...
Skills type, small gun.
Engineer and charisma.
Yes.
Yeah, I was talking my way through everything.
Yes, that's right. I put so many points into dialogue, which lets you like sort of pop up at the bottom of the screen. It's like, hey, you can lie about this. You can.
Like how, like, literally, it rewards you every time you level up. Like, I love that. Mm. It's like, oh, hey, you got like tons of points. Oh, I'm going to put all these into charisma and stuff like that. And lock picking.
They have like a bunch of flaws as well. Like, you know, if you fall from a height too much, you can take another floor. You can accept that you might not be good on your feet, but you can put more points into other specific specific perks. I like that they thought of all that stuff. Like I say, for me, it's the perfection of something that I don't feel Bethesda have ever really nailed in terms of all the aspects of it.
I will say towards the end, this game did get feel a bit like, go talk to someone, then go and get a bit of paper, then go through 17 more load screens.
There's a lot of
It did
of
get a
twists.
Bit more towards the end, but for most of it, I cared about these characters a lot more than any other Fallout game. Mm-hmm. Like, there was certain characters that I really wanted certain characters to be happy and find someone they love and stuff. And
now
I cared more about that than anything else in the game. Uh-huh. And I just wanted Pavati and Ellie with me until I felt like I had finished Pavati's run, and then I got Vicar, and he's like, I learned this in prison. And I'm just like, every time that cracks me up. Mm-hmm. But and in my head now, it's not about choice, it's about Space's choice.
Oh no, it's not about Space's choice. Speaking of our choice though, number three was Sekiro.
Three?
Sekiro Shadows Die Twice is number three, and you've only got yourselves to play.
It's okay though, because we know it's actually number one.
Well, do we though?
Is it
this is the objective factual list for all people, so...
You know whose fault this is, right?
Yes, it is, Mr. B-Roy. Mr. B-Roy put it right at the bottom.
Okay.
If it was even on your list at all.
It just made my top 20.
Gentlemen,
top 20
allow as well. Me to tell you why Sekiro is the game of the year.
It was number two.
I'll take it. Do you know what? Because I know what's above it, and those are also very good games.
You think you do.
Sekiro was... Oh!
Oh!
Oh, don't you dare!
We'll see.
Sekiro was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It took everything that obviously Dark Souls and Bloodborne did well. It took it one step further, and oh my god, did it make me feel some crazy feelings.
Like, my whole thing with it was that obviously From Software have made so many of these at this point that they know exactly how, you know, twinned with modern technology and the amount of data that they must be pulling from each player that goes through this stuff, they know how to like make something that is just going to test your like actual capabilities as a human being in terms of you need to have like perfect response times for to block some of the boss attacks or attack in rhythm or block in rhythm and things like that.
Yeah.
It elevates the whole experience for me.
For me, what like the actual combat itself, on top of being like so tight, like there would be like moments where a spear would go past like my head by like that much and it doesn't hit you.
Yeah.
It's so tight. But it is the introduction of having like three main sort of counters so you can block, deflect, jump and dodge. There's four, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And like it's deciding which one to do by actually watching the enemy, watching the boss, that I thought was like Sekiro's biggest strength.
It's just like it's like one giant ever expanding like spiral of rock, paper, scissors. And
yeah,
it's just okay, well this beats this, beats this, beats this.
Yeah.
And you start employing that. And also it rewards you thinking outside the box, taking a different route through a level and finding
stealthing
the power.
And...
Yeah, you can totally stealth to power up and stuff, and then maybe something you'll find will help you back when you're on the main path, and just everything folds back in. It's so immaculately well designed. I don't know if that's what you were going to say.
I agree.
Good.
For me, the biggest thing I can say about Sekiro is that I love all the From Software games, and I loved Sekiro. But in the other games, I've sort of just gotten by. I've learned the mechanics. I've learned to get good enough, but I've never learned to get properly good. Whereas Sekiro forced me to properly learn, like, enemy movesets. I wasn't just kind of trying to dodge out the way because I kind of saw they were going to attack. I had to learn every moveset so I can parry it properly. And I thought that engaged me on a level that the other games obviously can engage people on, but hadn't done it so directly. Whereas this was just like, no, you've got to learn this. Otherwise, you're just not going to progress. And I wanted to progress because the game was lovely.
Yeah, once you get that stuff down, like, I mean, I've gone back to Bloodborne since then and just defeated like Father Gascoigne first time. And I'm in this like weird Zen zone where everything feels like slow motion now because I'm in this like, you know, Unagi style Sekiro. Like, you know, I can deflect everything coming in. It's completely fine. But yeah, Sekiro just seems to be like the apex of everything that they've been building towards for like 10 years now.
I just wish it was more Tenchu.
Well, you're wrong. Number two is Death Stranding. I know.
Oh.
Let's talk about this before we go on to number one. Number two is Death Stranding, which was a lot of people... Well, it was both you guys' number one. It was my number two. But
I think
yeah.
it was my number three.
Yes.
Yeah.
You just wait. But the whole thing with Death Stranding, obviously massively ambitious game. The first thing from Kojima, since Zone of the Enders, first original IP that wasn't PT in terms of a full game. And it just doesn't hold anything back. There's not a single idea that he had in the last 30 years that isn't in this game. It's ludicrous. Although I think that the biggest takeaway positive is the idea of rebuilding America as a team. Like everybody, when you go through the story, you see things popping up, whether it's roads or zip lines or like trucks and bikes and things like that. It feels like everyone is working together, which only enhances the story overall and then where that story goes in time. What do you guys think of
this game? Sorry, I'm going to jump in at it.
Do it.
This game isn't just about like, it doesn't feel like a traditional game, which I think I've said a few times now. It's like, this isn't just about your own goal. This is about helping everyone across America, and not in just the way the community is like, oh, everyone must cross America because we must link the chiral network, but because everyone else,
he does say that.
People's stuff is popping up into your game, and your stuff is popping up into other people's games. And when you build that first road, like out of Lake North Sea, and you start getting people liking it, thank you. Someone used our road, someone used my watchtower, someone used this ladder that I put here when I was almost dead. Yes. And then I climbed up, and then I found a rope. I found a rope on a mountainside, and I was so happy because I was dead. The time snow was coming down, it was ruining the bomb on my back.
Good.
And I thought I was going to be destroyed.
Heck!
It was very stressful because I was like, I'm not going to go for the BTs. I'm going to go over the mountains. Mm-hmm. Worst mistake.
But it always requires way more items than you think you have.
And then all the weird Kojima stuff. And I'm going to say this again. Die Hardman is the best character performance I've seen in video games for a long time, if ever.
So
if you get to the
point, you're still
I guess he gets a bigger part. He's, I'm only at chapter 5.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more heart to him than just quest giver.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch that they do with the characters towards the back half. That's when it kind of becomes more of a Metal Gear style Kojima game where it's like cutscene.
Okay.
But overall, I think the biggest positive for Stranding, because for me, I don't think the script is any. I think the script's pretty bad.
It's so cheesy. But yeah. I love chatting about this game because I can't. I still haven't decided. 20 hours in and loving it the whole way. Whether it's good or bad.
I think it does a whole bunch of like really good things, like the communal building stuff. I love the fact that he took things like fetch quests and over encumbrance and made like addictive, enjoyable arcadey mechanics out of it. It is weird because you are spending so long just balancing and climbing and things like that. But like Benroy said, like, I mean, I had a moment where I was stuck in a whole field of BTs. I was down to like, I had no health left. And I just happened to look up and someone had built a zip line on the top of the next mountain and I was just in the range of it. So I busted out my creative thing, built a zip line on my own.
Yeah.
And whipped all the way out of there, and I was like, yep, this is brilliant.
Those are the moments.
It's for the moments like that.
That make it so good, man. Like, for me, this was my number one, and I think there are games that have been on this list that might be more, you know, cohesive or certainly more consistent in how quality the experience is overall.
Yeah.
But for me, like I said, with The Outer Worlds, I don't look for sort of, you know, something just being solid all the way through. I want it to sort of reach for the stars and occasionally hit it. And if it falls flat a little bit, that's fine because at least it's doing something more. It's striving to be more. And for me, Death Stranding was that. And it sort of captured my imagination in a way that a game hasn't for so long. And I just didn't want to stop playing it. And I just constantly was thinking about it, even the bad parts. And I think if a work of art can do that to a person, that must mean it's something special.
Yeah, the rollout of new mechanics, the way, like, it's the most surprising game I've had all generation. You don't know what's next in the best way possible, and it just keeps getting better. They only ever give you more things to play with and more ways to get through the world, and it's brilliant. Which, we'll do more stuff on this as well. We have a whole bunch of podcasts coming up, so we'll do another podcast on Death Stranding, and then we can talk about it way more. Because number one, in case you haven't already guessed,
is Resident Evil 2!
The remake! Which is clearly a bar-setting exemplary example of how to do a remake in terms of, you know, reapproaching something that everybody already loved. You've kind of got this template that you could have just reskinned and gone with, but they didn't. They kind of went down the RE4 route and put the camera over your shoulder and gave you this amazing, like you said, the RE engine that the Capcom
but they let
using
you
now.
Shoot while walking.
Yes, you can shoot while walking. You can check out this really good map. What?
I'm looking at this list.
Untitled Goose Game at number 9, Josh.
Up and down, and I just can't see Days Gone. Like, where? That should be number one.
I think only you voted for Days Gone out of literally everybody, so it didn't really...
I voted for Days Gone, and I spent at least 40 hours playing that game. I got the platinum in that game.
The brass tacks fact with Days Gone is that game was so middling that you gave up gaming for about 2 months. So don't give me that. You literally took a sabbatical from video games.
Fair enough, which I didn't with Resident Evil 2,
because
it is a bloody good, bloody scary, excellent game, and a perfect Resident Evil game, in my opinion.
Yes, and I think if we're talking about this ranking being being an example of how much we all like and this everything that we played, being a representation of everything that we played, Resident Evil 2 is the one thing that all of us took away and came back going, oh my god, this game.
I feel like I was going to be the only one shouting on the hill for Resident Evil at the beginning of the year. When everyone started playing, I was like, oh, it's not just me that likes this game. And it was so terrifying with Mr. X. And wait a minute, this is Resident Evil going forward. Because I thought 7 was the future of Resident Evil. And then we get Resident Evil 2 remake, and you're just like, this is just perfect survival horror. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It is a brilliant example of how they could go forward in two completely different ways. Yeah. I feel like that, for one franchise, is amazing. That's incredible to have those doors both open. Doors, get it right. The best thing that Resi 2 did for me was to offer a free demo. not a lot of you're laughing, but...
No, you're right, though.
That is what made me buy that game, take the chance, because I'd only ever played 7, loved it, and then thought, oh, well, I wouldn't like 2. It's different.
It's too old.
But no, played that demo, loved it, and then I remember thinking back in January, this is like game of the year material.
That's the thing, because it's like, as much as Death Stranding is original and something like DMC5 is like proficient and Outer Worlds is, you know, extremely responsive and open world and everything, what RE2 does, it's just pitch perfect from front to back. And although it is another like RE4 style horror game, like it's just the gore effects and the exploration, the puzzle based stuff, the items that you need to get, everything in there is just so carefully placed, and you'd struggle to find a flaw with it.
It's a great length as well. It's a good like package. It doesn't go on too long, and
it started the year off so well, and like you can go back to it and go and play through all the little bits you need to do. You can go through and do it in less than like 14,000 steps or something stupid.
What's your speed run record?
I think because I got the unlimited rocket launcher, so I did it in like 20 minutes, half an hour.
I'm sure Jules did it in about like 20 minutes.
Yeah, because Jules lived on that.
As soon as you get that rocket launcher, and as soon as you've done everything, you're just like, pfft, you're all dead.
But yeah, so that is our number one, Resident Evil 2. We will have a whole bunch of podcasts coming where we'll dissect stuff for full big chunks, game by game. But for now, this is the rundown of What Culture Gaming's Game of the Year 2019. I have been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Howie.
Thanks for listening.
And Ben Roy Turner.
Resident Evil.
And Josh Brown.
Thank you and goodbye.
We'll catch you next time. Untitled Goose Game.
Bonk.
Gears 5.
Sekiro.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.